Listeners, this week on the podcast, I have debut author Clementine Taylor, and we will be talking about her new book, Something About Her. Clementine, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for doing this.
No, thank you for having me. It's so great to be here.
You know, this is your first book, so I tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, I'd like my listeners to know more about you.
Sure. Okay. So, I actually always say to people that I'm very simple to get to know because I've essentially been in the same place my entire life. So I grew up in Oxford, in a family. Both my parents are academics, and my sister's also an academic. So it's kind of grew up like within the university town and really within the colleges, this kind of really beautiful historic town. And essentially I just haven't left. So I did my undergrad here. I did theology and religious studies. And then actually the only time that I did leave was to do a master's in gender studies. And obviously both of those kind of themes are things that I'm really interested in. As you can see, they're things which come up in the book a lot as well. Yeah, and now I'm based back in Oxford. I am doing a doctorate now on gender bias, which is extremely interesting. And so yeah, it's nice to still be in Oxford, which is great.
Tell us about the book. What is the book about?
Sure. So the book is a slow burn romance story, and it's set in Edinburgh in Scotland, beginning in 2013. And the romance is between two girls, Aisling, who's from County Clare in Ireland, and Maya, who's from London, who's grown up in London. And the two girls meet through the university's poetry society. It's Aisling's first year, it's Maya's second year. They're both studying English, and they both have this love of poetry, and that's where they meet. And the book is a dual first person narrative, so their voices are interwoven throughout, and usually this alternates between chapters, except for in the first two parts where we hear them separately. And yeah, really, we just see this kind of coming of age first love between the two of them, and as they become kind of more infatuated, entwined with one another. And it's really about how they learn about themselves and about each other. And how they're growing over that period of, it's about a year that the book covers. So,
And then, so what inspired the story?
sure. So, well, so there's actually two parts to this. I think the first part is to say that I think growing up, I would have loved to read a book like this myself. I think at school we were always given texts that presented these heterosexual relationships at their core. So things like obviously great books and plays like Pride and Prejudice or Romeo and Juliet. But I think I really wanted to write a book that I would have liked to read, which is one that has this kind of queer relationship at the center. And of course, we see more of that growing in fiction now, which is fantastic. But yeah, it was just really something that I felt myself in my heart that I wanted to write about. Something that I was passionate about putting into the world. And then I think the second reason about what inspired the story is that I saw a play in 2015 at the Edinburgh Fringe called A Girl is a Half-Warm Thing, which is was adapted from Emma McBride's novel of the same name. And it was adapted by Katie Ryan and performed by Aoife Duffin. And the play is all about this. The character is called Girl, so she's not actually named in the play or the book. And it's about her kind of grappling about with the complexities of being a woman, so sexuality and abuse and pregnancy, family illness, religion, just really and kind of all this deep trauma of being a woman, absolutely everything. And it was so raw and intimate watching that play, and it really, really affected me. It was kind of one of those events in my life that I think I look back on and I think like that is probably one of the things that really changed me and altered the way that I see the world. And definitely not comparing myself to the likes of Emma McBride, but I think I wanted to write a novel which had that intimacy with the characters, and almost a bit like a play in that sense, or a bit like Emma McBride's novel, where you're really in the head of the character, and you're really kind of seeing, hearing their thoughts, and you can really kind of get into their skin. And that was always to me an important part, which is why I wanted to write the book in this kind of first person way, so that you can see same events from different perspectives and really kind of get to know the way that they think.
Yeah, and they are both very different women and they're both very interesting. So I was hoping we could talk a little bit more about them. So tell us more about Ashlyn and Maya.
Sure, yeah, of course. Always happy to talk about them because I really feel like they are my friends. So it's funny when you're writing, you kind of get to know these people, and it is such a joy to spend time with them. So yeah, Aisling is from County Clare in Ireland, which is on the west coast, and she's come from a very strictly Catholic family, and she's really had a difficult background. Her mother has been abusive towards her for most of her life, and her father and her siblings have kind of turned a blind eye towards this. So she's really got this deep set trauma within her past. And at the beginning of the book, you see her budding romance with her best friend from school called Orla. And I guess Aisling's kind of always known that she's gay. And this romance with Orla is really her first sort of thing with another girl. And yeah, she's very deeply creative, and she loves to write and express herself. And I guess throughout the book, you kind of see that happening more and more, is her dealing with this trauma and using poetry as a way to express those parts of herself and process what's happened to her during her childhood. So that's Aisling. And then Maya is also extremely creative. I mean, they're both very creative girls, and she loves to read and write poetry as well, but she's also got this sort of artistic talent as a painter and a drawer, as you find out more throughout the book. And I think that was something that she was always passionate about, wanted to do when she was young, but that her parents, well, her father in particular, kind of encouraged her maybe not to go down that direction. And I think this is quite a common thing of my generation, is like having that safety net, that fallback of a degree, which I think is not really true, but is becoming less and less true as well at the moment. But yeah, so she's got this kind of really incredible artistic talent, and she comes from, in contrast to Aisling, quite a loving, close-knit family in West London, where she's lived all of her life, and she struggles with anxiety quite a lot. I think in the book it's named as an insect, but this is kind of something that she grapples with and struggles to kind of wrap her head around what it is. But that's something that also is dealt with throughout the book in terms of her kind of coming to terms with what that is and what it's related to, and how it's kind of related to this suppression of various things over the years as well.
Yeah, and I wanted to just hang out with them and have a cup of coffee and so
Me
it
too, me
was
too. I know, it's so funny. I think that has been one of the most interesting things for me about starting to write, and writing this book in particular, has been that these characters, they kind of start as like tiny little grains of sand in your mind, and then they really grow and develop, and it's so and you become so attached to them, which I think such a special thing. It's just like having invisible friends, I keep saying to people.
It's like, oh, and I gotta say goodbye.
I know, and now other people get to know them too. I'm gonna miss them.
So now one of the major themes in the book is mental health. And as you mentioned, Maya calls her anxiety the insect, which I think that's a really good way to put it. And then of course, Aisling has also got a lot that she's dealing with. So could you just want to expand on it and talk a little bit more about just maybe how that theme came about?
Yeah, sure. So you're so right. These are big, mental health is a big theme throughout the book. And they're very different in terms as well of what they're dealing with. And I think that how that came about is kind of going back to what I said at the beginning about what inspired me to write this book in the first place, which was to kind of grapple with some of these complexities that are to do with being a woman. And obviously in the book as well, it's also related to being a queer woman at this time in life, you know, as well, being at college, being university. It's all of these, the intersection of all of these things, and just trying to, I don't think that the book aims to give, it definitely doesn't aim to be preachy or sort of prescriptive about what is good and what is bad. And it doesn't aim to have clarity around what the right thing to do in these situations is. It just really aims to follow these girls throughout their journeys and to kind of unpack some of the things that they are feeling and thinking and the messiness of it all and the sadness and the heartbreak and the way that it can affect your life. And hopefully in doing that, to resonate with people, even if it's just a tiny bit. I think that's always one of the great, for me, has been always one of the great things about fiction is to read a book and to see, even if it's a tiny part of something that you've been through or something you've experienced, to see that in there. And even if not, to just read it and think, wow, well, that's not something that I've been through, but that's horrific, or like that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about it in this way, or like there's this bit of joy here from this step that someone's taken, or anything like that. So I think that was kind of the initial thoughts around doing that, yeah, was to think about the complexities and all the different aspects of mental health, and not even to touch on all of them, but just some parts of them, yeah.
No, and I think it's really well done because I mean you get the sense of like it's not something that can be solved in the you know in the book. Like they have to, it's something they probably will have to deal with their whole life. And you get that. You're so young, you know. I mean,
They're so young.
I'm in my 40s, so for me, it's like, yeah, this is they're very young. And so
I
there's
know
no
exactly. Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And I think as well, these are not things that sort of get solved immediately. These are things that people grapple with their whole life. And as you said, like these are, they're at university, this is their age, and but even throughout your life, these are things that people are going through, people are dealing with. They're not exclusive to that period of our lives. So yeah, I guess you're seeing them kind of on a state at a stage of their journey, but there's not that sort of closure within the book of resolve, which I know might be difficult for some people to read and not necessarily pleasant, but I think it was more important for me to feel there was that element of truth of there not being that resolve.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that has to be done. I feel like for especially for something like that, it has to be done that way.
I agree. Yeah. And I think that you ultimately get that with the ending of the book as well, which I don't want to spoil. But yeah, I guess the kind of the aim of that is to be ambiguous as well, and to kind of keep that element of it not being resolved, and all of that kind of thing. But I don't want to talk about that too much because I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, so and then, you know, as I was reading about Ashlyn, I think my heart just broke for her, especially like her family. I just kind of was like, especially her siblings, I wanted to be like, come on, do something.
I know. I think that is such a difficult part. It was actually even a difficult part to write because I kind of always knew that I think a part of having this trauma for her is that feeling of isolation and the feeling that no one else, even when they know that this kind of thing is happening, no one's calling it out, no one's got your back, and no one would believe you if you told them. And I think that kind of just like compounds how awful the abuse that she's been through throughout her childhood is. And I really wanted to capture that, but obviously that comes, it's very painful to it was painful to write, painful to read probably, but I also think that brings out one of the jewels of the book for me, which is when Sean kind of does eventually, who's one of her older brothers. So she has three older siblings. She's the youngest. One of them is Sean. He's the eldest of the four siblings. And at some point in the book, there is kind of a big blowout over Easter, and he does kind of come to her defense. And I think for me, that's maybe one of my favorite parts of the book and one of the most emotional parts for me, because you wanted that for her. So you're kind of going like, why is no one saying anything? You know, her father, all of her siblings, it just seems kind of perverse. And when you see that, it does kind of, you kind of feel this relief and think, wow, thank God, like they're not, you know, he's not insane. And it's kind of then also exploring his reasons for why he hasn't done that sooner. And this kind of awful manipulation and suppression that the mother, that Aisling's mother has produced in this entire family as well.
Yeah. I think one of the hardest parts, or the saddest parts that I read, was when, I guess it was when the family was together for Christmas, and she said something to the effect of like, she felt safer now that there were more people watching her, that like to be in your own home and not feel safe was.
I know. It's so true. Yeah, it's so true. And it's such a strange kind of safety that she, because I guess actually what she comes to realize, especially when she goes and stays eventually with Maya's parents, and nearer the end of the book, or in the second half of the book, there's this part which really breaks my heart as well for her, which is where she's in this house with this kind of loving family, and she's thinking, whoa, is this what it's like to have a home where you feel really safe, and you feel like there are people around you who love you, and you can actually go to sleep and actually sleep and not be worried about what might happen to you in the night and all of this kind of thing. And I just think that is also to me a very poignant moment for her in terms of that realization. And it kind of makes you go back on that bit at Christmas where she says, you know, she feels safer because people are around. But it's this change, that's her association of safety, but actually that kind of changes when she sees what other people's conceptualization of what safety is. And it's, I think that's quite heartbreaking.
All right, so a little happier topic here now.
Yeah.
So sounds good. Your book is set in Scotland, Ireland, and London. So have you lived, or have you visited all these places?
I have, and I love them all. Yeah, Edinburgh in particular for me is a very special place. I think I must have first gone there maybe 10 years ago now. And I don't think I've ever had a year where I haven't been back. I think I go there basically every year, and I'm very into theatre and plays. So I love the Fringe. I love going around that time of year, which actually I don't really touch on in the book, but it is an incredible time of year in Edinburgh where the air kind of seems to vibrate and buzz. And it's just kind of so wonderfully like colourful and eclectic. And you just feel like there's so much going on. And yeah, so Edinburgh is a very special place to me. And I think actually, it was a very important to me to have a place to set the book, or the majority of the book, where the majority of the book is set in Edinburgh, that could kind of capture all the tones of the book. So that happiness and joy of first love, and that kind of infatuation of, you know, being young and in love, but also to capture the kind of darker sides, the darker elements of the book as well. And I think Edinburgh does that really beautifully. I think it is a place which does both of those things. And it is kind of eerie, and but also kind of beautiful and happy and joyful and bright. And so, yeah, that was really crucial to me as well, to have somewhere that could embody those contrasting moods and elements of the story.
Yeah. I like the kind of the way the geography sort of interplayed with the moods of the story too. So
yeah. Love a bit of pathetic fallacy.
Now, okay, so who are your favorite, since poetry is how Maya and Aisling first connect, so who is your favorite poet, and do you write poetry?
Oh my gosh. Do you know, I actually don't. And I've never even tried, which was quite nice. I think I'm maybe at some point I will start to try. I do know some absolutely have a very dear friend of mine who are absolutely incredible poets, though, and I so admire anyone who can write them. So I quite enjoyed kind of channeling that incredible ability through these girls. Yeah, I think probably one of my favorite poets is Emily Dickinson, who I was actually writing about. I was writing a piece on her poetry. So I think Emily Dickinson, and I think I do actually say in the book, there's a bit in the book where they both buy books for each other, and one of them does buy a collection of Emily Dickinson's poetry for the other. So yeah, she is a very special poet to me, and I think the poetry in the book is not something that I am capable of, but I kind of love that those girls are able to do that and to think in that way, and that that's the way that they express themselves. Because I love reading poems, and so I think it was nice for me to imagine that they can do that, that that's their capability as well.
Yeah, it was really nice. So now how do you what type of writer are you? So do you plan everything out, or do you just start, get sit down at the computer with a blank page and just start writing?
I wish I could sit down with a blank page and start writing. Again, I have so much admiration for people who do that. I am a planner. I do plan things. So I think for this book, I planned out the whole kind of storyboard relatively roughly, and then I knew what was going in each chapter initially. But then as soon as I sat down to write it, that would change depending on what came up during the writing process, which might sound a bit cliche, but I think that was also one of the most exciting things for me about writing the book, was that you sit down and you think this chapter is going to have all this particular stuff in it, and actually it does have some of that stuff in it, but it also has a whole bunch of other stuff that you hadn't thought about. And that didn't happen to me initially, but as you get to know the characters, obviously because it's in the first person, as you more and more get to know the way that they think, more and more you can kind of have these unseen things come up, like little thoughts or glances at their senses of humor, or recollections that they would have, and that kind of thing. So I think that was a really nice thing for me, and I almost wouldn't have wanted to be able to meticulously plan this kind of book because it was so nice to be inside their minds and to have that kind of unpredictability when you sit down. Which is funny because in my everyday life I am a real planner. I'm not sure if you can see my diary. Obviously, listeners won't be able to see this, I'll hold it up for you. But like, this is my day-to-day planning of my day. So I love to plan by hour what I'm doing during the day. But writing is a really freeing thing for me to do because it enables me to have that sort of more spontaneous outlet, I guess.
So who did you create first, or who came into your mind first, Maya or Ashlyn?
Oh, Aisling, without a doubt. This book was originally a short story. So I started off writing short stories, and I guess almost the whole of the first part of the book, the Aisling part, was initially a short story. And I sort of remember rereading this short story and thinking, actually, I just really love, I love her. I want to make this into a novel. And I think that I found her easier to get to know, which I won't unpack, but I really did feel that I knew her quite instantly, whereas with Maya, it did take me a bit longer to understand her as a person and to kind of, yeah, to reveal her complexities and her background and all of this kind of thing. But in a way, it was quite nice to have those different journeys with both of them, and to kind of get to know them in different ways, which I guess is symbolic of how you have different friends in life who you kind of connect with immediately, and then there are the ones who maybe are it's a bit more of a slow burn. But yeah, I love them equally now, so
All
I
right, so
don't
your
have a
favorites,
favorite.
huh?
No favorite children, no.
So, have you started on a new project? So will you be writing more books?
I will be writing more books, and hopefully they will be published, touch wood. I have started writing two other books actually, and I'm just really enjoying the process of writing them. They're very different to one another, and they're very different to Something About Her. So we'll just kind of see what happens, but just really loving it at the moment and loving that kind of creative process, as I said, of getting to know the characters. And I think for me, what I really enjoy writing about is these really intimate relationships between two people. So both of the other books I'm working on do have, they kind of center around this relationship between two people. And they're not necessarily romantic relationships, but they are they're kind of very much trying to reveal the complexities of these people and how they relate to one another. And I think that's what I really enjoy the most. So hopefully we'll be able to keep writing about that for a long time.
Oh, all right. Sounds good. Yeah, I mean, you explore relationships really well here in this book. So I think look forward to seeing more.
Thank you. Fingers crossed.
So what do you hope readers take away from this book?
That is a good question. And I'm gonna give my honest answer, which is that I don't actually have an answer to that, because I think for me it's important that everyone takes something different from the book. And if your listeners do read the book and they get to the ending, I think they'll see that that is one of the reasons why that I've written the ending the way that it is because I really, really want readers to reflect on their kind of own personal reactions to the characters and the assumptions that they've built up throughout the book and the voices that they've heard speaking to them, which of the voices they, obviously it's a dual first person narrative, which of the voices are they relating to more, what parts of the book really resonate with them, and all of this kind of thing. So I think, sorry if that's not a very satisfactory answer, but I think that it would be wonderful to me if people take away anything from the book. Hopefully if they've enjoyed reading it though. But yeah, any reaction to the book, I think hopefully, as I said, it will either resonate with them in some kind of way, or if it doesn't, they'll learn something about other people's experiences. And that would be wonderful to me as well if that happens.
No, I think that's a good answer because it's, this is a form of art, and everyone takes something different from art, whether you're looking at it or whether you're reading it or you're looking at it or listening to it, it's always different experience for the person. So, okay, so last question is, what are you reading or what do you recommend we read?
Oh, okay. I love this question. Yeah, so I've just started actually reading Yerba Buena by Nina LaCour, which I'm loving and I really would recommend. I think other books that I would recommend, I'm not actually sure if it's published in the US, but you might be able to get it shipped. It's called Sunburn by Chloe Michelle Howarth. And it's about two young girls. It's set in Ireland. And it's about their kind of budding romance at school. It's just so beautifully written, so lyrical. The language is so lyrical, and it just really kind of it really took me in its grasp and kind of sucked me in. It was one of those great books which does that. So I would really recommend that. And similarly, Our Wives Under the Sea by Julia Armfield, I would love to recommend that to people as well. Which is again, actually, I hadn't read it before I started writing my book, but I said to someone the other day, I think it would have been a big influence for me because it's also this kind of dual first person narrative between these two women who are dealing with the trauma of one of the women in the couple. So it's a really stunning book. I mean, Julia Armfield is just such an exciting writer, and again, very lyrical, beautiful language. And really kind of getting into the mind, and it is just heartbreaking as well. So either of those books I would really recommend. I could go on, but I'll stop myself there.
That's a good list. Yes. And I know that the last one you just m mentioned, yeah, I've heard other people recommend that too. So, yep.
Really fantastic. Yeah, really great book.
Well, thank you so much for your time. This was so great. I loved just learning more about it, about the book and about the writing process.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been so great to speak to you.
And that's our show this week. Thank you so much for listening, and a special thanks to Clementine for taking the time to talk to us on the podcast. Stay tuned next week for Alexa Martin and her new novel, Next Door Nemesis.